Francis has a point to make. Morning, Francis.
Morning, Frank.
Yes, Francis. You've had an unfortunate experience?
Very unfortunate, Frank. About 3 weeks ago, I was at a local shopping centre and I took pretty ill. I took a TIA, a mini stroke.
Mm-hmm.
It's very rarely I go out on my own, but my grandson's in hospital and had been on the phone with him and he'd asked me for a few things, and I had decided that because it was a local shopping centre, and I sort of said to myself, well, I'll be safe, you know, if I do take ill. And I went there. When I was there, I decided I wanted a cup of coffee or something to eat, and I went to a fast food part in the centre. And when I was starting there, I realised I wasn't what I should be, and I took a TIA. And when you're like that, Frank, you're totally aware, more or less, what's going on around you, but you're totally paralysed and incapable. And it was one of the worst ones I've ever taken. And the young lad that was serving me, my meal came out, and it sat there. And he went back, I could see him come back in and speaking to the manager. There was no one else at the counter, only a young lad receiving his meal and walking away. And at the time, even then, I spoke to the manager and she just more or less shuffled at the chair, sort of waving her hand at him and shuffling him out, you know, sort of, you know, what are you talking about? And I could see her buckling her head to the side and looking out to see what was going on. And I was just leaning on the counter. I didn't know where I was going to fall or collapse or what. Absolutely terrified. I've no idea how long I stood there, and eventually I made my way from the counter and sat down on a chair, absolutely shaking. No one came near me. No one asked me anything. The next thing I knew, I don't know whether I went back, got my meal or not, to be quite honest with you. The next thing I knew, I was outside. And I was just more or less thinking to myself, am I able to go to this hospital to see the child? Or, you know, I was still quite out of it. But eventually phoned a taxi and away I went. And it was a couple of days later when I tried to contact the centre, and they told me more or less that there was, you know, they would see what they could do. After about three contacts with the centre and saying that I was going to contact a local radio, they eventually came back to me. There'd been nothing before that, and then when I said this, they came back to me and said, well, we don't have anything we can do with our tenants, you know. And I'm thinking to myself, I did try to contact Burger King HQ. And they said they only deal with England, Scotland and Wales.
Just to be clear on it, Francis, the main point you're making here is that when you felt really ill and you were leaning against the counter and struggling to get back to the seat, and you hadn't even taken your meal with you, which you'd obviously ordered, the staff at no point intervened to offer you a glass of water or to ask you how you were. They didn't come out to give you any assistance whatsoever. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely not, Frank. It was as if I hadn't been there, hadn't ordered the meal, nothing. And I mean, you know, the meal was still sitting there. Before the meal even came out, this was just, you know, just as I had ordered the meal, I realised it wasn't well. I was struggling actually to get my purse out of my bag. I was embarrassed. I realised it was coming on me, but it's coming on you, Frank. It just gets worse. It builds up. The momentum builds up. And, you know, I just to say, I've no idea how long I was standing there.
So you've a feeling that the young fella, he was suggesting to another member of staff that possibly there was something wrong with you, but neither of them actually came back to offer any assistance.
No, he actually went to the manager. You know, she sort of stands out in her dress, you know, in the way she's dressed, and he went into the manager, and she had no interest whatsoever. Absolutely no interest. The young lad at the counter was the only one that sort of said, you know, are you okay? And then when I was struggling with my purse, even the thing to pay him at that stage. And the meal sat on the counter for ages, you know. I walked out to say, I walked, sort of struggled after a while, walked away, sat down in the chair, and was literally shaking. I don't even remember leaving the chair, to be honest with you, Frank, and realising I was outside.
But during all of that, you're absolutely certain that the female manager didn't come out at any point to offer you a glass of water or assistance?
Absolutely not, Frank. Not even to say, are you okay? Absolutely not. Not to say, although you're totally incapable, you're 100% aware of what's going on around you. You're absolutely aware of what's going on. It's just, it was one of, you know, maybe it was the fact that I don't go out on my own very often, you know, well, at all. Usually my daughter would be with me, but it was just the fact that I had been speaking to my grandson and sort of, you know, and I was going to hospital to see him. But I was just so disgusted. And then getting in touch with the management of the centre, and they're telling me, you know, oh, there's nothing we could do. But surely that reflects on their you know, on their centre, you know, and I had said this to them, and I'd say, if you go to the tenant and you get no satisfaction, you go to the landlord, you know, but, and then say, I try to contact their HQ, and they tell me that they only dig in England, Scotland and Wales, because it is, you know, I'm aware that they're all a franchise.
Yeah, but why don't you go back to the actual, and you mentioned it's a Burger King outlet. We'll not say which Burger King outlet in Northern Ireland, but it is a Burger King that you've mentioned. So why do you not go back to that actual one and explain what happened to you to the most senior member of staff?
Well, the most senior member of staff, Frank, is the manager. And any time that I've been there, and, you know, I would be there quite regular because they would take my grandson to the cinema. And we'll go from the cinema to that fast food, and you know the same girl is always there.
So the one that didn't come out to help you is the most senior person.
Yeah, she's the most senior person there. She's the manager.
Yeah, I'm not sure what advice I can give then. As you're saying, the actual shopping centre aren't taking it very seriously. I would have expected more from the shopping centre. I certainly would have expected a whole lot more from two adults who are working in a burger bar. Jeepers, if someone is, you know, ill and they're a customer in the store, like, do people not have the cop on to intervene to, as I say, even offer a glass of water? Some people just don't have any skills, Francis. Are you feeling a bit better now?
I'm feeling grand now, Frank, you know, but it's just, I'm saying to myself, you know, if it could have been someone a bit older, if this had developed into even something worse, you know, if it had been someone having a heart attack, those few minutes could have made all the difference.
Totally,
you know,
totally.
I'm thinking what could have been, you know, thank God and His Holy Mother, you know, everything for me is grand, right? But I'm thinking, you know, are these people seriously, you know, I just don't know what way to take them, Frank, to be honest with you.
I think it's just lack of skill, Francis. I'm sure they're the two best young people in the world if you knew them, but they don't know what to do. And it's a reflection on whoever employs them. And you mentioned Burger King. I would like to think that Burger King would have a policy in relation to how they would assist a nil customer, and you were obviously ill in the store, you know, peeping out from behind the counter is hardly the way to go. In fairness to the young fella, he did ask you if you were all right, but it's very poor backup. You know, the most obvious thing to do is to come out and say, would you like a glass of water, or could I get a doctor for you? You know, but maybe they didn't get trained to do that. And sadly, some people in this day and age need trained before they can use common sense. Francis, as I say, I hope you are feeling better now. But thank you for highlighting it. And by the way, if you are a senior member of staff with Burger King anywhere in Northern Ireland and you'd like to come on the programme, the number is 90333105, and just talk us through what advice you do give to your manager or indeed to your counter staff when someone takes ill in your restaurant. You're very, very welcome on the programme to put your side of the story. Pete's got a point, I think something different. Morning, Pete.
Good morning, Frank.
Yes, Pete, what's on your mind?
First of all, Margaret was brilliant on the radio this morning. I thought her call into you was brilliant. Also, Karen, her statement about her driving course awareness and stuff, I thought was very, very sound. But I just wanted to bring a point up. I do about 1,000 miles a week. I'm driving from, say, 1 o'clock in the morning, and I do a run out through to Enniskillen, up through the West Coast, come back round through Derry, down through Coleraine, Ballymena. See, since the advent of LED running lights, I find that more and more people, as a fashion statement, are using fog lights during normal driving conditions. And do you see when the weather's wet, fog lights due to their low mounting position on fronts of cars are reflecting up off of road surfaces which are damp or frozen, and they are really, really worse than main beams. And I just wondered, the police don't seem to be bothering with it, even though it's a moving traffic violation. I just wondered, just as an awareness thing, can you maybe let your listeners know that it's a it's a really dangerous thing to be putting on, you know.
Yeah, that's a good point. Fog lights are necessary in the fog. That's what they're for. Whenever you're driving and there's no fog, do switch them off. I'm not sure it's a fashion accessory, as you said, or they use it as an accessory. I think it's just complacency. They put it on in the fog and then they forget to switch them off.
But
it's a good call, Pete. Just check, are you driving at the moment with your fog lights on? Please, switch them off. Now, let me speak to Carol. Morning, Carol.
Good morning, Frank.
Yes, Carol.
Just as regards the lady who took the TIA attack, a similar thing happened to me. Now, I'm going to mention it. It was in...
Well, hold on. Are you going to be praising people or criticising people? Praising people. That's all right. Yes. That's okay.
It was Bloomfields and Bangor, and it was in Tesco's. And just outside their door, I took a TIA attack. And my daughter, she had been with me and piles of groceries. And the security men, they were so good. They came out and they got a wheelchair and they got me into her car and they wanted to come home and put the groceries and all by for me. And they were so lovely. And she actually drove me on to the doctor's end and I was given injections and that, you know, and put to bed.
Yeah, you see, the people down around Bloomfield, obviously they've had a bit of advice. But as well as that, they've got common sense. This is what you do when someone isn't well. You intervene and you ask them if you can give assistance. If you can't give any assistance yourself, you ring a number to get professional help. You don't hide behind the counter where you've just served the burger from.
No, and I mean, your business is important. You don't want to send people away. You want them to praise you for their actions. And I couldn't have had anyone better. They were marvellous. And I did go and thank them later on.
Absolutely. And now you're thanking them again in public. The people down at Bloomfield Shopping Centre in Bangor, the security staff and the Tesco staff doing absolutely the right thing. Carol, thank you. Darren's on this line. Morning, Darren.
Good morning, Frank. How are you?
Very well, Darren.
Hello. Well, I'm going to be criticising Frank, so I'm not going to mention any names, but it was just about an incident that happened to my 8-year-old son there in July. He was at a summer scheme in Belfast, and this was only his second day at the summer scheme, and my wife received a phone call from the medical staff in it, the first responders, or whatever you want to call them. They said that my son was having a meltdown and would you be able to come down to get him. So my wife goes down to get him. The wee lad's squealing, holding his leg, terrible state he was in. A couple of first responder was there, duty manager was there, said that he'd had a fall. It was a nothing fall, there was nothing wrong with him.
What do you call a first responder? Is that someone who works for the play school, or is it someone from the paramedics come with a blue light?
No, the first responders would actually be working in this leisure centre, who are supposedly trained in first aid and to be able to spot anything that would be wrong with anyone.
All right, okay.
So anyway, so my wife actually sees that my wee lad, he's in distress. She phones me and I goes down. The duty manager is there, the manager's there, a couple of first responders, medical staff. There's nothing wrong with your son, he's fine. Wee lad's holding his leg, he's squealing the place down. I says, well, look, you know, you're in a leisure centre here, there's a doctor's surgery here, could you get a doctor? There's nothing wrong with him. Right, there's nothing wrong with him, okay. First responder, I was first on the scene, everything's fine with him. So, cut a long story short, my wife carried him out in her arms, into my car, took him to the Royal, and my wee lad's got a broken leg, snapped his tibia clean in half.
A broken leg?
A broken leg.
And he'd fallen playing one of the games or whatever?
Yeah. I don't want to say too much.
Yeah, he'd obviously fallen in some way.
Yeah, he got hit with something and he fell. He had a spiral fracture of his tibia. And he ended up, as soon as we got him to the Royal, as soon as we saw him, the doctor says he's got a broken leg. And the doctor told me how it happened before I even said anything. He says, I can tell you now how exactly that happened, which is what my son said, how it happened. Phone back down to the leisure centre. Oh, we're sorry to hear that. How did it happen? I says, how did it happen? I says, it happened while he was in there under your care. Oh, well, like it was nothing, you know, there was nothing wrong with him and all this sort of palaver. And there my son ended up in a wheelchair for 9 weeks. And they let my son, so you're talking about training. These people were medically trained, but yet they let my son get carried out of their leisure centre with a broken leg.
That is poor. That is really, really, that is really, really poor. Are you suing them?
Yeah, we are. We're trying to, but they're denying everything. They're denying everything. My wife had to go in to the chemist to try and get some sort of, like, Calpol to calm him down. He was squealing. They actually lifted him from where it happened and carried him out to another part of the leisure centre and sat him down. And my son had said to one of the guys, don't touch me, don't touch me. And he says, if you don't move your leg, I'll move it for you.
No, that's bad form. That really is bad form. That's so depressing to hear, darling. I'm not surprised that you're going to take that one a bit further. Appreciate you not saying exactly where it is. We don't have the other side of the argument, but the kid broke his leg while in the care of another organisation, and the people who were trained in first aid, I no idea that he had a broken leg. That is poor childcare. Right, it's coming up on 11:30. Good morning. How's the form with you? It's the Frank Mitchell phone-in. Let me speak to Gerard, who sadly's got a tale to tell us that I, from the note I have here, is pretty distressing. Gerard, good morning.
Morning, Frank. How are you?
Very well, Gerard. Tell us the story, please.
Well, Frank, my mother passed away April of 2003, and we buried her in the Belfast City Cemetery. A number of weeks ago, about 4 weeks ago there, a relative was up visiting his mother's grave as well and went to look at my mother's headstone and where's her the headstone had gone.
Someone had actually taken away the headstone.
Took away the headstone and the mount, took it all away.
I know.
Took it away.
We've heard in the past of people vandalising, damaging headstones, but
yes,
this is stolen.
Stolen. We went up the following morning. That was Friday. Saturday morning, up to the City Cemetery office. And the guy was opening up the door. And me and my father were there. And a friend. And he says, can I help you? I says, yeah, I'm here to find out about my mother's headstone. It's stolen or missing. He says, what do you mean? Amy, it's missing. It's not on the plat. It's taken away. Someone stole it. Because if you can't work done it, I says, no. Is there anything getting me? No, the family haven't got nobody getting into the grave. It's just sitting there alone. It's only about 200 yards away from the office itself. So we walked up with the guy and we had a look. And yeah, there it was, missing just a wee concrete thing, but the headstone sitting there.
And what was the headstone like? Describe it to me.
It was a black headstone with a mother's name and the wee verse and a statue of Our Lady and a photograph of her on it as well. So the fella says, I don't believe this. Amy, you don't believe it? Amy, there's tire treads on the muck, on the grass here. We can see someone drove in and took it. He said, we'll go down to the office and we'll have a look. So we went down to the office and had a look, and he says, there's nothing on the books. There's no one come in to do repairs or anything like that at all. He says, so it's stolen then? Will I get in contact with police? He says, no, oh, just take it easy, we'll get the, and you get the bottom of it, it's missing, it's actually been stolen, it's been missing without our consent. So he says, there's a number, phone around headstone people and undertakers and see if they made a ticket.
By mistake, they may have taken it to do some repairs to it or whatever.
Yeah. And I said, but what do you want to do repairs for when we haven't got it there for be repaired or do you only work to it?
Yeah, if you were getting new names printed on it, they would come and print it on site, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They bring a wee machine out, a generator and a wee thing, and they work at it there at the grave. So, cut a long story short, eventually, we went home, my sister was crying, my father was upset. It was like grieving again. I felt like as if we were grieving again. Someone had stolen my mum's headstone, and it was like, we're all grieving. Brought it all back like a big nightmare.
Why would someone steal a headstone? And I'm not being
answer questions we were asking.
Yeah, I'm not being flippant in saying this because I know there's an old joke along these lines where you know someone advertised a headstone in the paper and then you know would suit a family surname Smith. You know that sort of way whereby it was already printed out for someone else.
Yep.
So I'm keeping, you know, your grief in mind when I say this. Mm-hmm. But if your mum's name was on it or the family name was on it, surely it would only be of use to someone of the same name.
we thought that, and everybody was out. We're all asking the same questions, friends, relatives. We're all questioning each other. Why? That was the main word. Why? Why take it? We couldn't believe it, that they would be so low as a ticket. So eventually we made a few phone calls around with other people, and we actually found out later that a known headstone maker, I'm not going to name him, took it. It was in his shed. He had taken it. And when I made contact with him, and my sister made contact with him, they denied that they had it. So with the threat, I said, well, we'll go to police, get the police involved here. We'll get the police to go to the headstone man, because the guy who told us was a workman. He worked for the headstone people.
Yeah, I don't want you to tell me anything more about the headstone people, because there are many, many people who carve headstones, who are involved in the headstone game. You can get headstones from all walks of life, and at the moment we have no idea who you're talking about, and I don't want to have any idea who you're talking about. Did you get it back off him?
We eventually got it back, so we did. Without really an apology.
And why did he take it? Did he give a reason why he took it?
The reason why they say they took it is they went up to the row of graves where my mum is, and they said they made a mistake on the number. There's a number on the side of every headstone, like 601-705-703.
Mm-hmm.
He went up to look for 704 and looked at my mum's, which was 705.
And why would he be taking 704? What was he going to do with the other one?
He was supposed to be doing work to it, adding names or something to it.
And were you able to check that with that other family?
No, I didn't get in contact with the other family because I didn't want to give them our grief.
Yeah.
They'd be probably grieving enough over their own loss.
Yeah. Sure. Well, it is. At least it's an explanation. Gosh, it sounds like as if it's the most incompetent headstone maker in Northern Ireland if he's going to put somebody else's name on your mother's headstone. But thankfully, you did get it back. But it's very distressing, Jared.
Well, what I'm worried about is at least we do go and visit her. My sister and my father haven't left my mother's grave since this has happened. They're up nearly every day. Every minute they get an update, we can't get them away. Can't get my father, can't get my sister away from it. They won't leave it. They're afraid of the same thing happening again, or they're getting sick again. But what I'm worried about is, if we wouldn't have noticed that we didn't go to the grave, would they have admitted that they have got it?
Well, they probably would have, as I say, returned it with someone else's name on it, which would have been...
Would have polished it down and put another person's name on it even.
Yeah, but that's always a worry and a concern, yeah, if it was going to be sold on to entirely different people. It's horrible to think that you have this worry that it was possibly being stolen for that reason. I would accept their argument that they lifted it by mistake, but it's incompetence of the highest order, and it's added to your grief and your family's grief. Jared, thanks for telling us about it. Thank you. I'm glad you have it back. That's the important thing. It is back where it belongs.
The Frank Mitchell phone-in on U105. Conversation for you.